Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:01 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 14th. Well, the S&P 500 bounced today from the region of the 50-day moving average. I think it is important to highlight that the 50-day moving average tends to be a point of reference during strong momentum moves. And the last time that was particularly relevant was all the way back in 2017. We had a very significant and impressive momentum move right after the presidential election. The market took the news that the Trump administration was going to cut corporate taxes and allow for the repatriation of foreign assets to heart, and investors supported that move with a very significant run-up, where the market went up by about 33% over the course of about 15 months. But the most important point is that it never came back to the 200-day moving average. And there were successive occasions in which it found support in the region of the 50-day moving average. Now, that big momentum move was predicated on the anticipation of the benefit that companies would get from a significant tax cut. When we then think about what's going on right now, well, we've had an equally impressive advance where the market, in fact, has gone up more since March than it did in all of 2017. But the reason, or the rationale for supporting the market at these levels, is completely based upon the expectation that there is going to be continued inflows of liquidity, and that the Federal Reserve and other central banks are willing to run inflation hot in order to completely obliterate the potential for deflation, and also to try and erode the massive quantity of debt that's been taken on to tackle the coronavirus. Well, as long as investors believe that the Federal Reserve has got their back, and that anytime there is a significant bout of volatility that central banks will just simply step in and start printing, then they are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to momentum. So we've had a significant rebound today on the S&P 500. At least it is the first evidence of clear support coming through in the region of the 50-day moving average. Then when we look at the NASDAQ, it's also steadied. It wasn't up in quite the same dynamic manner as the S&P 500, but it's a very common characteristic that we have right across the boards. The Dow Jones, for example, was up in excess of 300 points and bouncing also from the region of the 50-day moving average. And it's equally true of gold. Gold has now found support in the region of the 50-day moving average on multiple occasions since August, and it firmed additionally in here again. Now, this is obviously still a very strong momentum move, and we've had a 6-week consolidation which has unwound at least partially the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. But then we have to start thinking about, well, what exactly is going on here? What is the only thing that could possibly derail the continued support for momentum moves on Wall Street? Well, it's inflation. The only thing that would curtail the ability of the central bank to continue to support massive provisions of liquidity would be if inflationary pressure started to rise. Well, that's not a near-term prospect for the USA, at least. The 10-year Treasury yield remains range-bound. It was in mildly positive territory today, but it's still trading today pretty close to where it was trading back in March. And until we see a clear and sustained move back above the 1% level, and I think perhaps more correctly the 1.5% level, then this is still a reasonably benign environment from the perspective of liquidity. The one place that we certainly have evidence of the increases in government bond yields is China. It has clearly broken the downtrend. yields had been compressing meaningfully from the beginning of 2018 all the way through until the lows around 2.5% in March. Now we have seen a significant rebound. It's broken the downtrend. It's found support in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's pushed onto a new recovery high. This is an uptrend, and it does suggest that Chinese investors, at the minimum, are beginning to price in the potential for inflationary pressures to rise. And of course, if inflation rises in China, it puts upward pressure on manufacturing costs, and those manufacturing costs will get baked into export prices, and higher export prices for goods and services coming out of China will have a global effect. So it is something that we do have to pay attention to. Then I think it's also relevant that commodity prices are starting to rise. And soybeans popped on the upside last week and held on to the gain in here today. Lean hogs prices have also been rising, and that is a market that's been hit by any number of different factors over the course of the last year. Now, the price was mildly negative territory in here today, and it's been very choppy over the course of the last few years, where we've had very big swings in contract rolls. Now, generally speaking, that has been influenced by the slaughter schedule, but the slaughter schedule has been upset by the events of the coronavirus. But we also know that swine flu is now in Germany. It has ravaged the head count for pigs in China, and this is obviously something that's going to take time to overcome, not least because it takes time to rebuild herds, I guess, numbers. Well, when we then think about, well, what could be some of the animating factors? Well, the continued provision of massive amounts of liquidity is obviously a significant factor. Now, the Federal Reserve has stopped adding to the size of its balance sheet, and the ECB has also tapered its the assistance that it is providing. But what we definitely saw over the weekend is increasing optimism about the potential for a vaccine to be provided this year. The Nasdaq Biotech Index has bounced now really quite impressively from the 4,000 level. That coincides with the region of the trend mean, but it's also the previous peak around 2015. This continues to look like a first step above the base, and there is clear potential that we're going to see significant additional upside in the biotechnology sector over coming years. Part of the reason for the move was because of enthusiasm that companies like Moderna will be able to get their solution to market this year. Pfizer said today that they will be having, or they do believe that they'll be marketing their vaccine before the end of the year. AstraZeneca, who had paused their trial last week, brought it back into effect over the weekend. So that also bounced from the region of the trend mean last week. What it holds out the prospect of is we're going to have vaccines made available within the next 10 weeks. And if that's the case, then it does hold out the prospect for enthusiasm about recovery to start to take hold. And that's perhaps most important for the industrial sector, where demand for infrastructure and for big pieces of equipment has been curtailed by the significant downward spiral of economic activity as a result of the lockdowns from the coronavirus. Well, it's very likely we're going to have a big snapback. Well, the velocity of money has collapsed as a result of the coronavirus, and when we do get vaccines, then it's very likely that we're going to get a big snapback in terms of all kinds of economic activity and social activity, whether that is people, our kids going back to school, people going back to work, or then also people engaging in much more leisure activity. And there is probably going to be a booming market for live entertainment like sports and music. for at least the next 12 months, once we do get vaccines becoming widely available. So that does hold out the prospect of inflationary pressures beginning to rise next year. And that will be particularly true if we do get economic activity coming through on a year-over-year basis, because obviously we're going to have a very big divergence in economic activity between the second quarter of next year and this year. Well, therefore, it's I think quite clear that inflationary pressures are potentially going to be a factor next year, but it also means that companies will get back some of their pricing power. And then there's the potential that we're going to have a significant uptick in infrastructure development. Well, industrial metal prices will likely benefit from that kind of activity, and copper was in additional upward territory in here today. I think the missing ingredient in terms of commodity price inflation so far has been the oil price, and it was in negative territory again in here today. It really probably is waiting for a clear resumption of economic activity overall, simply because when people are driving less and when there is less, when there are fewer ships moving around, then that does impact the overall amount of oil that is being burned. So it does suggest that we do need more economic activity to erode the supply surfeit. But then there's clearly the scope for oil prices to recover somewhat when we do get economic activity coming through, and then that will also be representative of additional upward pressure on commodity prices. Now we also have weather that could potentially impact the commodity outlook, and obviously we have got very low commodity prices, and there is the potential that commodities generally are going to do better, and then that will also introduce commodity price inflation into the equation, because we had a very significant breakdown back in March. It's pretty much recouped all of the decline. It's now threatening the sequence of lower rally highs, but it's at least consolidating above 400 on the continuous commodity index, and that suggests that we are potentially now in the process of completing a base formation for the wider commodity complex. The semiconductors index has been among the best performers. It's also bounced from the region of the 50-day moving average, but it is really, or we've had a very clear acceleration in terms of the overall trend. So I do think that there is quite clearly the potential that we're going to get significant rotation. Not necessarily because the technology sector is going to collapse, but rather that we've got a large number of companies that were crucified by the very aggressive manner in which the global economy was cut off. When we look at, for example, Cisco, it's one of the biggest suppliers of services and goods to the restaurant and hospitality sectors, and it has rebounded and rather impressively, and it's been able to push back above the trend mean. Well, if that's the case, then we would have to at least give some due consideration to the potential for the wider hospitality sector to recover, because without the hospitality sector, Cisco doesn't have a business. Now, it's also a dividend aristocrat, so the fact that it is so far has been able to hold on to the dividend is also a testament to the ability of the sector to recover once we do get vaccines. Obviously, then the big question is going to be about the willingness of central banks to continue to provide liquidity. And will they aggressively take some of that liquidity out of the system when the velocity of money picks up? it pretty much ensures that we're likely to have an inflationary outcome next year, and that central banks have already told us that they're going to wait it out, and they want to see average inflation increase. And we still have negative real interest rates. So, in fact, we have the widest negative real interest rates since the 1970s. And this is obviously also designed to provide an inflationary bias. When we've got 100 basis points of negative real interest rates, then that is a very significant medium-term tailwind for precious metal prices. It's also obviously going to be very significantly supportive of growth, since companies can borrow at very low interest rates. But the only way that that's going to change is if we get a significant move in interest rates. And that is the big potential catalyst. So we're still in a momentum move. We still have clear support from negative real interest rates for both high gold sectors and precious metals. But precious metals do better in an inflationary environment than growth does, unless growth can really pick up on the upside and completely outstrip the challenge from interest rates. But that becomes progressively more difficult the higher interest rates go. The other point, of course, is that property prices are rather extraordinary relative to where rental yields are right now. And when you've got negative capitation rates, then that clearly signals that property prices are very interest rate sensitive. And that is sustainable when we've got negative real interest rates. But is it going to be sustainable if interest rates rise? That's something that property investors need to pay attention to. And I think with that, I will leave you for the week or today, and wish all the best to all of you.